this week on the IoT podcast.
And Smart IoT is a bespoke development house that specializes in connecting devices to the digital world. You create a product that actually works 100% of the time, people will love it and people will use it. And if you can't get to that stage, your adoption rate is going to suck. C-level is going to say, we're not going to do this again.
And our elite and well-known researcher, Katie, she told me secretly that you don't like the term IoT, Sebastian. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because my company is called Smart IoT.
And you are on the IoT podcast as well.
Yes, I am. Absolutely. What people think of when they hear the term IoT is they think of sensors, I think. And the second thing is, I'm not always talking about the internet. A lot of Nordstrom's competition have LTE contracts for every operator. Imagine you have 50 doors and you have to buy 50 LTE contracts. That's not a good solution. We created a Bluetooth Low Energy mesh between the operators to let them talk to each other and created a gateway that's talking via LTE to the internet and to all these 50 operators. So it became a lot cheaper to operate these things. And that's what it's all about, cost savings.
Software as a service, and ever increasingly seeing microtransactions. We're paying for small individual aspects. What are the kind of pros and cons to this in your view? Are we leading, you know, consumers into more debt by not managing their monthly payments and so on? Or are there other benefits? And why do you think the world has gone that way, specifically within the IoT ecosystem as well?
Mm-hmm. So I actually disagree with your question. Let me discuss why.
Welcome back to the IoT podcast. I'm your host, Tom White. Every week, we are joined by the biggest names in IoT to unravel the trends, misconceptions, and predictions for the Internet of Things. Before we get into today's episode, don't forget to subscribe on whichever platform you're watching or listening on, and turn on that notification bell so you're never out of the loop.
Great discussion in today's episode with Sebastian Van Wickern, CEO of IoT Smart Solutions, helping companies develop enhanced products for IoT. We look at ways to speed up go-to-market, the misconceptions about IoT monetization, opportunities, risk of entering the market, and the ever-evolving IoT business models and subscription services in the industry. Let's get into it.
Hello and welcome back to the IoT podcast. Sebastian, thank you for joining me today.
Tom, thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you here. We're a big fan of German-based IoT businesses and the whole Mittelstand economy, as we call it, right? So it'd be great to understand a little bit more about you, your background, and what it is that your company does in IoT. If you could kick us off, please, Sebastian.
Of course. So I'm Sebastian Van Wickern. I founded Smart IoT 10 years ago with only 26 years of age. And Smart IoT is a bespoke development house that specializes in connecting devices to the digital world. And I used to be a developer for connected devices 10 years ago. And all I really wanted to do was get out of the big company I was working for, the environment. I wanted to create a new, better environment for developers, you know, where developers could thrive and the problems and the communication problems between product management and development wouldn't be that big. And, you know, the growth kind of just happened. Today, we're 30 people. We have offices in Dallas, Texas, and Essen, Germany. We're doing product development, UI, UX, hardware, firmware development, app development, web development. And we do have the processes to guide big businesses through the challenges of getting their non-digital products into the digital world.
Amazing. Thank you for that intro and congratulations on 10 years. No mean feat.
Yeah, it's been a long time and it's been a crazy experience and I've learned so much over these 10 years.
I can only imagine. So actually, it's a very similar story to mine. So my business is 8 years old on Saturday, actually, at the time of recording. Thank you very much. Yes, at the time of recording, it's the 11th of April. And it will be the 13th of April that we're 8 years old. And I'm 39. So similar sort of age to you, similar length in duration of business in the weird and wonderful and complex world of IoT. So, yeah, I'm sure we've got many stories, but perhaps we'll save that for off the podcast.
Sure.
So in terms of the business then, so look, well done, obviously, on the growth, getting the 30 employees, having two international offices. What is it that you specifically help customers do then? Because I think a lot of companies, you know, their market entry into IoT, depending on if they come from an industrial landscape or automotive, can be quite convoluted and slow. And that's what mm-hmm. we've seen. That's what we've heard a lot of. So where does smart IoT solutions maximize that revenue and that speed to get into market?
So here's what I think. A lot of the companies I talk to today already do have connected products. And it's not that you need to teach them that they need connected products. They actually do know that already. The problem, I think, is in the quality they produce. They hadn't, you know, they didn't know how to do it right, and they didn't know what to look for when they first did it. So they ended up with a lot of broken functionality. They ended up with user experience that was not perfect, and they ended up with an overall slow process. That's what I'm seeing in industries a lot. Not customer-facing things so much, but industry-facing things, B2B things a lot. And I think due to our 10 years of experience in that field, and we've seen a lot of those applications, we've actually made a lot of those mistakes too in the early days, we can guide customers through that experience really quickly and make sure they don't do the same mistakes.
Well, yeah, I think that's primarily been some of the issues actually that customers have had in the past, right? You know, making the mistakes, going at it two or three times. Have you found in the past actually, Sebastian, that some of the customers that you might have dealt with have maybe given up or tried to park it because they've made those mistakes, and actually you were able to come in and help kind of reignite that flame, so to speak?
I think it's not one example. It's an overall issue. I mean, if you go into industry, B2B players foremost today, and you look at their product management, will have good ideas about digitalization, but C-level is probably not going to do it and not going to spend a lot of money on it because they have not seen the adoption rates that they wanted to. Just one example. I've been to a customer a couple of weeks ago, and they have a really great product. I'm not going to get into too much detail of what they do and stuff, but while I was playing around with a product, I couldn't even figure out how to get that thing into the Wi-Fi. And that's a huge problem. I mean, there's your adoption rate right there. Get the user experience right, and people will adopt, you know? Especially in business products where everyone just spends 10 minutes and, you know, after that, if I don't need the data, you know, I'm not going to do it. The other thing is, I mean, look at the public infrastructure. If I drive a Tesla today, I had a Polestar before, and I don't know if you, Tom, have an electric car, do you?
Actually, I have a Tesla on order, funnily enough. I'm waiting for it to arrive in a few months' time.
All right. So if you had a non-Tesla before and you drove up to a charging station, you would have to get out, get your RFID card out or your app, and you would have to fumble about with the charging station. It wouldn't work, you know? It would work like 8 out of 10 times maybe. So you would look at the product and at your car and look, hey, is it actually charging? And you don't do that with a Tesla. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about quality. If you create a product that actually works 100% of the time, people will love it and people will use it. And if you can't get to that stage, your adoption rate is going to suck. And after your first product, C-level is going to say, we're not going to do this again.
Mm, mm, And I think that's a lot of the issue, isn't it? It's a longer term commitment into doing it. But of course, these things are iterative as well, aren't they? Because it's not always going to be perfect out the box. No. And there will be issues. There will be adoption issues, as you sort of say. But I think, you know, what kind of rings kind of a number of bells here for me is a previous podcast I did with a company called Protekio, and they spoke about the difference in you know, C-suite, you know, the product managers, as you say, and actually not being in harmony. So I think that's one of the key steps, is getting that in harmony first and knowing why you're doing this, because it's never going to work straight away, you know? So no. I think that's a really, really, really good example, actually.
Yeah. You know, I think this could actually work. And I'm with you on the iterative approach. What we usually do is we come up with an MVP kind of approach and do something small, and then go to friendly customers of that customer we currently work for, and then test it out. Because, I mean, you know, if you stray too far from the bunch, you're obviously going to have adoption problems. That's a given. But you can minimize those if you talk to the target audience a lot. And we actually try to do that. And iterative is exactly spot on. This is what we do. This is what needs to be done in any software development, especially if it's connected. This is, if you develop a connected product, it's always going to be a very complex product and a very, very complex user experience, because people have to know a lot about your product to actually use it.
Yeah, totally. So can you explain your approach then, Sebastian, to bridging physical and digital world together, right? But also maintaining that adaptability for the future. How is Smart IoT Solutions different to, say, other businesses that have tried this in the past? And why do you think you have an advantage in doing that?
So we actually try to take the customer with us. We're not the kind of software development house where you put a bunch of requirements into and say, please do this. This is not what we do. First of all, I get a lot of those documents. They're called system requirement documents or whatever you want to put as a headline. And what we do is we ask a bunch of questions about them. And usually, and I have very good examples for that, they're not complete. Starting at, you know, you want to create a locker. And that locker is going to sit on airfields, on the aprons. So have you thought about minus 30, minus 20 Celsius or plus 85 Celsius on an apron? On top of, hey, have we put every user that is going to use the product into the frame? Why are they going to install your app? You know, these kind of questions we ask that at the first stage. It's a lot about user stories. It's a lot about how do we get people to actually use your product, because that's most of the problem today. To me. And then once we have a set of requirements that we all feel comfortable with, we start in a Scrum-like process where we start throwing out software iterations. And we actually talk to... So what we do is 6 weeks in advance, we require the product managers of our clients to give us user stories, and we're going to break them down with them and expand and put a lot of detail in them and get a lot of verification by the product management to that is what we understood from their user stories is actually what they want. Because that's one of the big issues in software development to me. People don't understand what the other person means. And listening and verification is the hard part. Software developers, you're going to find software developers that anywhere in the world that can do a fantastic job. But getting those requirements right, I think that's what we're good at, and that's where we differ.
That's a great answer. I think it's easy to cut code, right? In the same way, it's easy to run in one direction really, 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 really quick and do it really, really well. But if you're running in the wrong direction, you're still in the wrong direction.
Yes. And it doesn't serve anyone.
Yeah. Completely agree. So I think, look, I've always got a lot of respect for businesses like yours, you know, someone that's gone out, been entrepreneurial, built a company, got it to a certain point, expanded, and tried to take on the status quo, right? That is IoT software solutions. But I'm curious, because in our show flow and our elite and well-known researcher, Katie, she told me secretly that you don't like the term IoT, Sebastian. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because my company is called Smart IoT. What I think...
And you are on the IoT podcast as well.
Yes, I am. Absolutely. Which is completely funny. But here's what I use. I use the term connected device. And you've heard me say that a bunch of times today already. And I do that because what we talk about when I say connected device is mostly actors and sensors in one device. And what people think of when they hear the term IoT is they think of sensors, I think. That's my feeling. And the second thing is, I'm not always talking about the internet. You know, if we talk about LoRaWAN, it's not necessarily the internet. If I talk about Zigbee or Bluetooth Low Energy, it's not necessarily the internet they talk to, you know? If it's narrowband IoT or let's say LTE-M, yes, then it's the internet. Or, well, it might be, you know? So Internet of Things is not really a good term to me. But, you know, we've all agreed on IoT, so it's fine to me.
Yeah, it's funny. I had the same conversation with a lot of people. You know, I think, you know, IoT really only describes the ability for devices to connect, or for devices to connect to the environment around us. But actually, in the future, that's just going to be what it is. And so we don't need a term for something that is ubiquitous, because it's ingrained within society. So I also agree with you in the sense that the term itself may be redundant in the future, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, completely agree. I wanted to jump on, if I could, Sebastian, to talk about a couple of maybe some case studies that mm-hmm. could be quite useful to share. So a little bit about some of the work that you've done. We've heard so many weird and wonderful case studies in the past from lots of different businesses, and some have been really eye-opening. And I'd wondered if we could talk about a couple of things which are notable to you that you might want to share today.
Sure. So what I always think of is last year when I think about things we've done, because, I mean, we do a lot of projects every year. And one that particularly stood out last year started in October 2022. When Nobelfirm, a manufacturer for industry doors and operators, came to us and asked us if we could connect their current customer-facing series. And it's an industry door that's used by DHL or, you know, Amazon. So huge warehouses, 50, 70 industry doors right next to each other. And what they wanted was an app to set those up quickly and do copy and paste functions. So you set up one industry door, and they do have like 200 parameters. You wouldn't believe. And right next to that is the exact same industry door. And you would have to, you know, go through the same process 50, 70 times. Why can't you just copy paste the setup you've just done? That was the first app. And then the next thing is, hey, you need these infos about, hey, how much current are they drawing? What's going to go wrong next? You really need those in the internet, because you want a maintenance crew to be able to look at them and call the customer and ask, hey, do you need, you know, maintenance on this door? It's going to break next week. Or when it's already broken down, you want a first-time fixing rate of 100%. So you want the right spare part in your car. That was the user story. And then the other user story is a lot of Nordstrom's competition have LTE contracts for every operator. So imagine you have 50 doors and you have to buy 50 LTE contracts. That's not a good solution. So we created a Bluetooth Low Energy mesh between the operators to let them talk to each other, and created a gateway that's talking via LTE to the internet and to all these 50 operators. So it became a lot cheaper to operate these things. And that's what it's all about, cost savings. That was basically the project. The timeline was very, very difficult since they wanted to present this thing in April on a trade show in Germany. So we had like 5 months of actually doing stuff. We did. And a month later, after the trade show, they delivered to a first friendly customer.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great. And that's what it's all about, right? It's about using the right technology for the right use case. And precisely, as you say, that wasn't right for them to be using LTE. There was another way of doing it, and a more efficient way, and ultimately a cost-saving element. So it's great to hear those case studies. You guys must have been at Embedded World recently then, I would imagine. Did you guys go down to Nuremberg for that, or...?
A couple of our guys were yesterday and the day before yesterday. Two of our devs and our business development, the head of business development, was there.
Yeah. It's a fantastic event. Very, very large, right? I think one of the largest in the world, isn't it?
It's huge.
Lots of use cases. Yeah. I did say to Katie, actually, maybe next year we'll go and film out there at the event, which would be quite cool, right? Go and grab
a load
of people.
Yeah.
And do some shots. Fantastic use cases, and I think, you know, again, great to be in the position that you are in as a business, you know, and hopefully by coming on the podcast today, you know, we can give you that exposure to so that other people viewing and listening get to find out a little bit more about you. And you mentioned at the start, Sebastian, that you've now expanded into Dallas. Is that right? Why Dallas in particular?
Well, we found a new customer in the US, and they wanted us to have a US base. So, you know, I grabbed the opportunity and thought, well, this is good news. Let's expand into the US. Then we found a CEO who represents our company in the US, and kind of just became Dallas because it became Dallas. There's no particular reason for that location in the US. It just happened, you know, like a lot of things in smart IoT just happened. But it's going great. We're actually currently talking to another two potential clients in the US. And I think we're going to expand a lot in the US in the next couple of years.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, we've done the same here, actually. So, you know, we've grown up business. We work with, I can tell you openly and publicly, because I mentioned it on the podcast, but Ross Sapolsky from Silicon Labs came on our podcast recently, and we work with them over in Austin. In fact, Texas is a great place to be because you had a big migration to Texas from the Bay Area many years ago. You spoke about Tesla earlier. I think it's when Tesla first built their gigafactory outside of Austin that enabled a number of other people to grow and go out there for taxation reasons and so on, because California
very is true.
Very expensive out there, right? So, great place. Sheer size and scale. I mean, you know, you being a German national, me being from the UK, you know, we're not in small places, but actually you place Germany or you place the UK into the US, and it could be, you know, replicated many, many times over, you know, in terms of the actual landmass. So,
I actually used to live in Indiana, so I know the scale a little bit better maybe than most Germans, yes, but it's so huge. Well, yeah. Humongous, to be honest.
Absolutely. And just my kind of final question today is wanted to touch on how you see the proliferation of business models. So, you know, in the past, you know, we used to have this very, what we see now as an old-fashioned way of buying or procuring software, where we've now moved into the world of, you know, SaaS-based models, software as a service, and ever increasingly seeing microtransactions where we're paying for small individual aspects. What are the kind of pros and cons to this in your view? Because, you know, are we leading, you know, consumers into more debt by not managing their monthly payments and so on? Or are there other benefits? And why do you think the world has gone that way, specifically within the IoT ecosystem as well?
Mm-hmm. So I actually disagree with your question. Let me discuss why. So SaaS in the IoT kind of world, to me, is not perfect. I see a lot of business models out there that work better for the typical use case that I see. Let's say razor and blades, product as a service, maybe in industries where a lot of leasing happened already anyhow, and the likes. SaaS as part of the business model space in there is good as it is, but there are other options. I actually think that consumers and businesses can live through the pros a lot more. I mean, I'm on the business side and I usually consult businesses. So what I'm telling them is that they are going to get the better side of SaaS or PaaS or razor and blade if they prolong the time that users spend on the platform. So the lifetime value of a customer, the customer lifetime value, you need to increase that to reap the benefits. As a customer, obviously, I need to know what I'm paying for. Obviously, I mean, we all pay for Spotify or Apple Music or something or Netflix. And it's probably not cheaper than buying DVDs, but there is no DVD anymore. So, you know, but to me, there are three things in this kind of thing. There's cultural change. You can't stray too far from the bunch. If your industry doesn't do SaaS, PaaS yet, don't start with something crazy. And you need to watch who pays for it. So who has the most benefits needs to pay for it. All others should be free and not aggravating users. So if you buy an Apple iPhone for £1,300 or the equivalent dollar amount or euro amount, you don't want to enter into a subscription a day later. Give your users some free month or free years if they bought your product.
I love the fact that you share that view, right? Because it's easy just to go along with the status quo. That, and word I used earlier, it's easy to go along with the narrative of it. But actually, what do people want? What would they need? And what will make them loyal? You mentioned earlier the RFID, the tags, you know, when charging, etc. Things need to work, and people want to feel that they're buying into a company that has equal kind of care around their user experience as well as the profit that they're making. So yeah. I agree. I mean, personally, I'm not a big fan of all SaaS-based models because I think it can get out of hand. I also don't like microtransactions when it comes in the car. Like if the car already has heated seats, but I've got to spend 50p a month to pay for like that's just really frustrating. And someone's gonna hack it anyway, right, and get it to you
very true
for free, so you might as well just change it. So but as an ecosystem, as a world, we seem to be going more that way, don't we? So I think that's a good way to end that question, actually. It's not necessarily that it's always fit for purpose for everyone at all times. And I think that's one of the things that perhaps if people are listening, smart IoT solutions might be able to help you with, because they'll actually listen to what you want rather than just tell you, right? So so there we are. There's a little plug. Sebastian, it's been great having you on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed it. You're clearly an entrepreneur, clearly very bright. Your business is doing really well. I enjoyed the case studies and learning more about your company. So as usual in the IoT podcast, I was just going to wrap up with a couple of questions, if I may.
Sure.
So great question this is, and this one comes up every episode. What challenge are you facing at the moment in your everyday life that there is not currently any tech solution for?
I don't know the answer for that.
Okay. maybe it is a trick question. Maybe there's a tech solution for everything now.
Maybe there is. I honestly don't know. So the kind of things we're actively doing research on is a lot of CGM based things for cats now, because obviously I don't own a cat. I just know the trouble of some of our pharma customers that they have a lot of cats who are overweight and have diabetes, but actually pricking a cat is not really a good idea. So you should really not be doing that.
Amazing. And what's a gadget that you can't live without in your everyday life? And you can't say your phone, Sebastian.
All right, not my phone. Swift in my indoor bike. I'm a huge fan of road biking and gravel biking. And I do races. But I also have a 9-month-old. So I don't have a lot of time to spare. And indoor racing on Swift with the Wahoo Kicker bike is a game changer. You can do it at 10 p.m., no lights out, you know. It still works. Fantastic.
Amazing. Oh, amazing. And that was going to lead me on to nicely to my next question. So a passion that you have outside of work, but I guess it's road biking then, is that right?
Gravel biking, to be honest. So
gravel
I do
biking.
A lot
oh,
of
gravel
biking.
Biking
every year. Yes, I do. Yeah. But gravel biking. I'm actually at 3 rides in Aachen on the 12th of May.
Okay.
I'm starting in that race. I'm completely passionate about this.
Oh wow. Okay. And so for those that don't know, what the difference in gravel biking and road biking clearly is just the surface in which you're riding on. It's a gravel, a kind of loose texture, as opposed to tarmac or asphalt. Is that right?
Yes, very true. It's still a road bike from the looks of it. It just has wider tires that are fit to go off-road. And it's not really just gravel anymore. It's light mountain bike trails and everything in between and a lot of mud. And it's fun.
Nice, nice. I've got a canyon at home myself.
I'm
a big fan of canyon bikes. In fact, that's a whole other topic about how they change the game on direct to consumer, right? No, it's great. Sebastian, thank you so much for coming on to the IoT podcast today. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me, Tom.